Welcome. Tonight we begin chapter 16, Oneness. This essay that Sri Aurobindo published in the Arya on 15 March 1917 was barely touched. There was a change here or there on a single page. Somewhere before 1932. So it stands largely as we had it at that time. You might be interested to know that here we are in the chapter, which is now in the section called The Yoga of Integral Knowledge. And the essay immediately in front of the synthesis, opening that issue of the Arya, was the integral knowledge. Following the synthesis, essays on the Gita, Sankhya and Yoga. So we have seen that Sri Aurobindo to present to us a picture of what the sadhana is, the straight path that leads us to the largest knowledge, begins with elementary steps, including purification of the being to make it one-pointed so that all the being stands together in its aspiration, that it concentrate itself. Building power through tapasya, that it renounced the things that would distract, that would delimit this adventure. So, if we have to give up identification with the body to become more than just the body, if we have to give up identification with our vital passions and our thoughts, etc., if we have indeed to give up the sense of self which we seem to be invested with, that is all well and good, because to get to the essence of being is the quest for the individual, it's the quest for the cosmos. It's the promise of the return for what has been invested in us by the divine being. Sri Aurobindo has now shown that stage after stage we can arrive at that which is eternal and immortal in ourselves, not simply the discovery of the truth of our soul, but also the truth of the cosmos, the truth how the unmoving reality becomes dynamic, moves, changes, evolves. And all within the context of a single being. There is only one reality. Sri Aurobindo is absolute in his marriage to the spirit and in his marriage to this earth and all that stands between. For Sri Aurobindo, nothing will be left out in this grand equation. Purnam madaha, purnam idam. That is full. This is full. The full is taken out of the full. Take out the full from the full remains. As he would call it, this is the logic of the infinite. So, it's a short chapter, but we're only going to look at about half of it tonight. And we'll have the rest for dessert next time. Chapter 16, Oneness. When, then, by the withdrawal of the center of consciousness From identification with the mind, life, and body, one has discovered one's true self, discovered the oneness of that self with the pure, silent, immutable Brahman, discovered in the immutable, in the Akshara Brahman, that by which the individual being escapes from his own personality into the impersonal. The first movement of the path of knowledge has been completed. So this already is a considerable sadhana. This challenges us not to live in the small, but to live in the large, to not be encompassed by our senses, by our bodily possibilities, by our emotional limits, or the parameters of our mind. We must first live in that still self, that silent, immutable, pure being. It is Shiva, sheer auspiciousness. And that is the first round of the yoga. It is the soul that is absolutely necessary for the traditional aim of the yoga of knowledge, for emergence, for escape from cosmic existence, for release into the absolute and ineffable Parabrahman who is beyond all cosmic being. So for the aspirant of the usual path of knowledge, jnana yoga, getting to that experience is quintessential. The rest may or may not be interesting. That one must attain. The seeker of this ultimate release may take other realizations on his way, may realize the Lord of the universe, Isha, the Purusha who manifests himself in all creatures, may arrive at the cosmic consciousness, may know and feel his unity with all beings. But these are only stages or circumstances of his journey, results of the unfolding of his soul as it approaches nearer the ineffable goal. To pass beyond them all is his supreme object. When, on the other hand, having attained to the freedom and the silence and the peace, we resume possession by the cosmic consciousness of the active as well as the silent Brahman and can securely live in the divine freedom as well as rest in it. We have completed the second movement of the path, by which the integrality of self-knowledge becomes the station of the liberated soul. So this is calling us to look again at the Vedantic teaching encoded in the Bhagavad Gita. This would be the sixth chapter, Shloka 31, where it says, bhajati ekatvam astitaha, bonded and established in oneness. It says more fully in English, the yogin who takes his stand upon oneness and loves me and all beings, however, in all ways, he lives and acts in me. This is the supreme being stationed in the heart of all, who contains the all, and yet is each, and is the transcendent beyond both universe and individual. So Sri Aurobindo calls us to a completer knowledge. Not simply the ascent into the Akshara Brahman, but the return to discover that here all is Brahman, that indeed it is Isha that has gone forth and distributed itself in all existences from times sempiternal, from the beginning of the cycles of time. That being has been here. Could be nowhere else. The soul thus possessed, the soul thus possesses itself in the unity of Satchit Ananda upon all the manifest planes of its own being. This is the characteristic of the integral yoga, that it unifies all in Satchit Ananda, because not only is being one in itself, but it is one everywhere, in all its poises and in every aspect, in its utmost appearance of multiplicity as in its utmost appearance of oneness. Sri Aurobindo again brings us to the idea that there are manifest planes of being which are implicit in the immensity and the silent, undisturbed reality which is beyond all. But it becomes manifest, and hence there is created a multiplicity. And it is only if there is a multiplicity that unity can exist. They are mutually dependent. They are coeval in the stance of their being. The traditional knowledge, while it admits this truth in theory, yet reasons practically as if the oneness were not equal everywhere or could not be equally realized in all. It finds it in the unmanifest absolute, but not so much in the manifestation. Finds it purer in the impersonal than in the personal, complete in the nirguna, not so complete in the saguna, satisfyingly present in the silent and inactive Brahman, not so satisfyingly present in the active. Therefore, it places all these other terms of the absolute below their opposites in the scale of ascent and urges their final rejection as if it were indispensable to the utter realization. So this is the standpoint of Advaita Vedanta, perhaps. If we can be a little playful for the moment, the Advaita philosophy was the great favorite of the Brahmin caste in India, but let us note that Sri Aurobindo was more or less from the Kshatriya class. He was not a Brahmin and was much more favorable to the world than those who would eschew themselves from that world. Send me your angry letters. Therefore, it places all these other terms of the absolute below their opposites in the scale of ascent and urges their final rejection as if it were indispensable to the utter realization. Whatever we may achieve and realizing Purushottama as the omnipresent, personal, divine to the Advaitin, that is a lesser manifestation. Push it away, push it away. Sri Aurobindo asserts this: the integral knowledge makes no such division. It arrives at a different kind of absoluteness in its vision of the unity. It finds the same oneness in the unmanifest and the manifest, in the impersonal and the personal, in nirguna and saguna, in the infinite depths of the universal silence and the infinite largeness of the universal action. This would be the Isha Upanishad. This would be the 14th verse there. It finds the same absolute oneness in the Purusha and the Prakriti, in the divine presence and the works of the divine power and knowledge, in the eternal manifestness of the one Purusha and the constant manifestation of the many Purushas, in the inalienable unity of Satchit Ananda, keeping constantly real to itself in its own manifold oneness, and in the apparent divisions of mind, life, and body, in which oneness is constantly, if secretly, real, and constantly seeks to be realized. All unity is to it an intense, pure, and infinite realization, all difference, an abundance, rich and boundless realization of the same divine and eternal being. The complete realization of unity is therefore the essence of the integral knowledge and of the integral yoga. So the two come together. Integration means to make complete. It means to make the being one. For Sri Aurobindo, it is not simply a question of our individual capacity to achieve identity with the silent self above all manifestation, but to bring the terms of the eternal through the mind into the heart, into all the vibrations of our vitality, and into the tissues of the body. That is integral yoga. The knowledge that one must have must also be true at every level of the being. To discover and know only through the mind or only in the recesses of the soul is not enough. One must wake the body to the presence of the divine in its personal and vast being, individual and universal being. So too with the emotions. They must know, they must feel divine. The mind must wake to the wideness and to the depth of a greater knowledge than is capable of this ratiocinative organ that we are typically limited by. To know Satchit Ananda, one in himself and one in all his manifestation, is the basis of knowledge. To make that vision of oneness real to the consciousness in its status and in its action, and to become that by merging the sense of separate individuality in the sense of unity with the being and with all beings, is its effectuation in yoga of knowledge. To live, think, feel, will, and act in that sense of unity is its effectuation in the individual being and the individual life. This realization of oneness and this practice of oneness in difference is the whole of the yoga. So he describes here the ascent and the descent. The ideal made practical. And if you like to get a taste of the Rig Veda in your mouth from time to time, this is it. This idea about this great consciousness, both in status of action and being, in our ascent back to that unifying truth, so that we can effectuate all of it here in the body. That goes back thousands of years to one of the older sections of the Rig Veda, the fifth mandala, the 62nd hymn, and the first verse. By the truth, Ritena Ritam, is veiled that ever-standing truth of yours where they unyoke the horses of the sun. There, the 1000s stand still together. That one, Tad Ekam, I have beheld the greatest of the embodied gods. This idea of the one who is the origin of this vast consciousness, this sun-like awareness, which thins out countless rays to express itself, which come down here, shed upon the earth, we can, through our conscious ascent, gather together again, marshal them together again, and climb stage by stage until we reach unification with that solar orb, and there perceive these truths, which seem to be many, come together as one and stand still again. That is one part, that is that ascent, but then there is the return. The aspirant, having attained that, doesn't sit above, but returns with that luminosity, with those many powers, with those endless felicities, and introduces them again into the earth life. This is Satchit Ananda, existence, consciousness, bliss. The term again first appeared not in the early Upanishads, not in the Rig Veda. Satchit Ananda appears in theistic Vedanta, where there is the oneness, the large accord of a supreme being who becomes the universe without losing his supernal height and stature, and dwells also in the heart of each individual, and can draw one through aspiration and kinship back into communion, which then blossoms in the earth and makes it a field of beauty. So this is a very grand concept, and if it doesn't stretch back many thousands of years, it stretches back, oh, at least 1500. Satchit Ananda is one in himself, in whatever status or whatever plane of existence. It is, again, an omnipresent reality. We have, therefore, to make that the basis of all effectuation, whether of consciousness or force or being, whether of knowledge or will or delight. We have, as we have seen, to live in the consciousness of the absolute transcendent and of the absolute manifested in all relations, impersonal and manifest as all personalities, beyond all qualities and rich in infinite quality, a silence out of which the eternal word creates, a divine calm and peace, possessing itself in infinite joy and activity. So here he really means that Nirguna is Saguna. We have to find him. Knowing all, sanctioning all, governing all, containing, upholding, and informing all as the Purusha, and at the same time, executing all knowledge, will, and formation as Prakriti. We have to see him as one existence, being gathered in itself, and being displayed in all existences, as one consciousness, concentrated in the unity of its existence, extended in universal nature, and many-centered in innumerable beings, one force, static in its repose of self-gathered consciousness and dynamic in its activity of extended consciousness. One delight, blissfully aware of its featureless infinity and blissfully aware of all feature and force and forms as itself. One creative knowledge and governing will, supramental, originative, and determinative of all minds, lives, and bodies. One mind, containing all mental beings and constituting all their mental activities. One life, active in all living beings and generative of their vital activities. One substance, constituting all forms and objects as the visible and sensible mold in which mind and life manifest and act just as one pure existence in that ether in which all conscious force and delight exist unified and find themselves variously. For these are the seven principles of the manifest being of Satchit Ananda. So, existence, Sat, consciousness, Chit, force, Shakti, delight, Ananda, but also a knowledge that is will, a will that is knowledge, vijnana, a mind that encompasses all, manas, a worldwide vitality, prana, and this base of all things, which is the food for the divine, to feed it as it grows, to feed it as it grows from the inconscient back towards the superconscient, anam. The seven principles, which he describes as the sevenfold cord of being in the life divine. We might also note in passing from the Brihadaranyaka Upanishad, in the first section, the fourth chapter, the seventh verse, he entered in here, even to the tips of the nails. So in other words, this conscious power of the self, of the divine, has claimed the manifestation for itself and come to the very edge of the most outer part of the nature. It starts inside, but it's not absent anywhere. And the Brihadaranyaka is the oldest of all the Upanishads. And then the next oldest is the Chandogya Upanishad, and in its sixth section, ninth chapter, in the first verse, says, just as the bees make honey by collecting the pollen of different trees and refine them to one essence, this is what we are to do in our experience of the world. This is what the divine accomplishes. One rasam, comes from all these experiences, and each reveals some aspect of the divine delight which is spread across the universe. There may be seven planes, but there's one being who contains them all. Universes and the beings who populate them may be endless, but they swim in the oceanic reality of this existence, consciousness, and bliss, whose name cannot be spoken because it is beyond the nameable. We figure it again in the Veda as Tad Ekam, that one, or we simply wonder at it. But we can experience it from the tissues of our body to the loftiest perceptions possible, which are based on the unity of that and you. Tat Tvam Asi. The integral yoga of knowledge has to recognize the double nature of this manifestation. For there is the higher nature of Satchit-Ananda, in which he is found, and the lower nature of mind, life, and body, in which he is veiled. And to reconcile and unite the two in the oneness of the illumined realization, we have not to leave them separate so that we live a sort of double life, spiritual within or above, mental and material in our active and earthly living. We have to review and remold the lower living in the light, force, and joy of the higher reality. This is the empowerment of yoga in the form. We have to realize matter as a sense-created mold of spirit, a vehicle for all manifestation of the light, force, and joy of Satchit-Ananda in the highest conditions of terrestrial being and activity. We have to see life as a channel for the infinite force divine and break the barrier of a sense-created and mind-created farness and division from it, so that that divine power may take possession of and direct and change all our life activities until our vitality, transfigured, ceases in the end to be the limited life force which now supports mind and body and becomes a figure of the all-blissful conscious force of Satchit-Ananda. We have similarly to change our sensational and emotional mentality into a play of the divine love and universal delight. And we have to surcharge the intellect, which seeks to know and will in us with the light of the divine knowledge will, until it is transformed into a figure of that higher and sublime activity. So the higher levels capture the light into the base of the body, and nothing remains the same. You can see that this is a release of all the lower cords of the being, body, life, and mind, back into the higher. Sri Aurobindo has already written about the sevenfold cord of being and noted that the body can be recognized as Sat. that the life force here, prana, can be recognized as a stream of that conscious power, chittapas, that mind, the field of manas, is itself derived from the vast light and knowledge of vijnana, the supramental. And that delight, it's the soul of the cosmos. It's the soul of your soul. Nothing goes without Ananda. This is what the Taittiriya Upanishad famously disclosed. And really, although Sri Aurobindo spent so much time writing and commenting on the Isha Upanishad, because in a very few verses, it constellated the whole of the Vedantic philosophy, it was the Taittiriya, the song of divine delight, that was most appealing to him. So, let our minds become receptive to the supramental, which can reshape and illuminate us, as we were saying earlier, as we started our evening with Sri Aurobindo's Gayatri. Well, we'll put a footnote there, a bookmark there, rather, and come back to it next week, and I think read at least for a few minutes from Savitri. Tonight, or today, we'll start with Book 1, the Book of Beginnings, Canto 5. The Yoga of the Spirit's Freedom and Greatness. And we'll begin on page 88. 'A giant order was discovered here, of which the tassel and extended fringe are the scant stuff of our material lives. This overt universe, whose figures hide the secrets merged in superconscient light, wrote clear the letters of its glowing code. A map of subtle signs surpassing thought was hung upon a wall of inmost mind, illumining the world's concrete images into significant symbols by its gloss. It offered to the intuitive exegete its reflex of the eternal mystery, ascending and descending twixt life's poles. The serried kingdoms of the graded law plunged from the everlasting into time, then, glad of a glory of multitudinous mind, and rich with life's adventure and delight, and packed with the beauty of matter's shapes and hues, climbed back from time into undying self, up a golden ladder carrying the soul, tying with diamond threads the spirit's extremes. In this drop from consciousness to consciousness, each leaned on the occult in conscience power, the fountain of its needed ignorance, archmason of the limits by which it lives. In this soar from consciousness to consciousness, each lifted tops to that from which it came, origin of all that it had ever been, and home of all that it could still become. An organ scale of the eternal's acts, mounting to their climax in an endless calm, paces of the many-visaged wonderful, predestined stadia of the evolving way, measures of the stature of the growing soul, they interpreted existence to itself, and mediating twixt the heights and deeps, united the veiled married opposites, and linked creation to the ineffable. A last high world was seen, where all worlds meet. In its summit gleam, where night is not, nor sleep, the light began of the Trinity Supreme. All there discovered what it seeks for here. It freed the finite into boundlessness and rose into its own eternities. The inconscient found its heart of consciousness, the idea and feeling groping in ignorance at last clutched passionately the body of truth. The music born in matter's silences plucked nude out of the ineffable's fathomlessness the meaning it had held but could not voice. The perfect rhythm, now only sometimes dreamed, an answer brought to the torn earth's hungry need, rending the night that had concealed the unknown, giving to her her lost, forgotten soul. A grand solution closed the long impasse in which the heights of mortal effort end. A reconciling wisdom looked on life. It took the striving undertones of mind and took the confused refrain of human hopes and made of them a sweet and happy call. It lifted from an underground of pain the inarticulate murmur of our lives and found for it a sense illimitable, a mighty oneness, its perpetual theme. It caught the soul's faint, scattered utterances, read hardly twixt our lines of rigid thought, or mid this drowse and coma on matter's breast, heard like disjointed mutterings in sleep. It grouped the golden links that they had lost and showed to them their divine unity, saving from the error of divided self the deep spiritual cry in all that is. So, oneness reminds me of the one book that friends of ours, Ron Jorgensen and Bill Leon, comrades for decades, have compiled and brought into a glad synthesis, distilling the world's wisdom into a few hundred pages. And I invite you to explore this volume and to participate in the wondrous delight that they tasted as they built this book. So, off you go. Happy hunting. Much love to you all. All the very best. Namaste. Jai Ma.